On Tech News Today, Google catches a creep and calls the cops after reading his email. Plus, Square wants to deliver your dinner, and China bans more foreign tech companies. All that and more coming up right now on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, August 4th, 2014. This episode is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter makes hiring faster, easier, and cheaper. Post your job to 50-plus job boards with one click. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TNT. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. Welcome to the show. I'm Mike Elgin. Anthony Nielsen is tricasting today. Thank you for doing that today, Anthony. And Lindsay Turrentine is our co-anchor today. And every Monday, welcome, Lindsay Turrentine.
Hello.
So you rocked it on Twit yesterday. That was quite a show.
That was, it was a very fun time. I had a great time.
Yes, and everybody...
Only my second time in the Brick House, and it was great.
The first time was when I was hosting.
That's right.
And that was, yeah, that was fantastic as well. We didn't have the legendary John C. Dvorak to contend with, as you did, but great job getting a word in edgewise.
Thanks. I was very well positioned between John and Leah.
That's right. Well, good job on that. Let's jump right into the news. Google turned in a Houston man after finding child pornography in his Gmail inbox. The company notified a child protection agency, which called the police. The man, who is a registered sex offender, is now in custody. The case raises questions about Google's policies for scanning the email of users. Marianne Russin is a technology reporter for the International Business Times, and she's calling in from London. Welcome, Marianne.
Hi there.
Now, how much do we know about Google's Gmail scanning and what sorts of things they're looking for?
Well, we know that they've actually been doing this for quite a few years. It's not really a new thing. It's more just the issue that they never really explained that they were doing this. And basically, the situation basically came to a head last year when a U.S. judge ruled that they absolutely need to specifically say this. I believe they were being sued about the issue, saying that a whole bunch of claimants believed that Google had been violating state and federal laws, meaning that it was violating the privacy of millions of users, not just in the U.S., but all around the world. And so this was a U.S. ruling saying that Google really should be updating its terms of service and privacy policy. And so basically, Google specifically said, we're analyzing everything, everything you use, everything you upload, you use, you send and receive in our services, whether it's uploading, adding a little restaurant tag to Google Maps or just sending an email to your friend, we are analyzing everything that you're sending so that we can send more relevant products to you and more customized search results.
So, Marianne, can you tell us what you know about the particulars of this case? What's the history of the suspect? What was he doing? What did the police find?
Well, basically what he was doing is he apparently sent three pictures that of explicit content to a friend. And Google spotted this because they've got an image scanner, so it automatically tags, it's got technology to automatically tag these images and then send that information to Google, flagging it up as an alert. So when they got that, they immediately contacted, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and that then tipped off the police.
That's really interesting technology that they have. Now, as far as we understand, what they're doing is they're not really looking at pictures. They're looking at the hashes of pictures, which provide a kind of signature for an image.
Yes.
And then comparing it against the same sorts of scanning that they do for, you know, Google Images. They can figure out all kinds of things, which they demonstrated on Google Plus. There was a new product that they rolled out a couple of years ago where they demonstrated the ability to distinguish between adults and children on Google Plus. So that's one piece of technology they clearly have. They obviously have had for years the ability to detect when there's an inordinate amount of exposed skin in a picture. They can tell that. And then they must, and at the end of the day, though, after all this scanning, has got to be a flag that goes up where a human being goes in and verifies it. Because, I mean, they're calling the police on people. And, you know, I doubt that they would rely entirely upon algorithms for that sort of thing. Now, the red flags in this case is this person's a convicted sex offender. So that may have been a red flag, although there was nothing, as far as we know, that was in his Gmail. So Google may have found that out somewhere else. Who knows? Maybe through Google search or something like that. And of course, whatever technology they have. And then one can imagine a likely scenario where they have a policy where they go in and they look for this particular type of crime to make sure to verify that that is what it is before they call the authorities.
Yeah, each of the images actually gets a unique ID. And what they're doing is they're making a sort of fingerprint of all of these different images, and they're compiling it into a big database. So that's the point where the human comes in. So the unique ID that comes from the signature is something that then gets cross-referenced with this database.
So are these images that Google has flagged, or is that database also cross-referenced with existing databases that law enforcement agencies have, databases of images
it's
that they know are out there?
It's cross-referenced with companies, law enforcement, charities, but it's probably using a lot of the stuff that Google has found itself and has assigned an ID to. So then when they see something similar, the computer kind of makes that decision and flags up as an alert.
Now, Google claims that they don't search for other types of crimes. For example, they don't look for illegally downloaded content or evidence of hate speech or anything like that. They really keep it very narrowly. And in fact, they are required by law to report cases of child pornography when they see it. The whole question here is that at what point do they go looking for it in people's emails? Now, a few other salacious details about the alleged perpetrator. He works at Denny's, and when they basically raided his house, they found on his phone and on his tablet all kinds of child pornography. And they also very creepily found, according to the New York Daily News, pictures that he had taken as a cook at Denny's of children who were customers at the restaurant. Not a lot of detail about those. But anyway, the point is that the Gmail flagged it, the police moved in, and they found massive amounts of evidence. And, of course, he's already served many, many years as a child offender. Now, Gmail has more than 400 million users. And, you know, this is just Gmail. Of course, there were other evidence that they found. For example, they found text messages where he was discussing his child pornography hobby or whatever you want to call it. And so there's just massive amounts of evidence. The police are super grateful. Google is doing this. Marianne, do you think that there's any sort of controversy in here? Of course, everybody wants to jail child pornographers and other creepy weirdos. Do you think there's going to be any controversy, though, with Google going in and sort of doing this kind of scanning?
I think there has been a controversy for quite a while, particularly with all the NSA revelations. Pretty much people have just been saying, and it's becoming a thing that, you know, people are saying on the internet, if you really care about your privacy, you really need to stop using, you know, these well-known products. Stop using Facebook. Stop using Gmail. Don't be using any of it, because, you know, they've even said themselves that there are back doors, which the NSA forced so that they could get these revelations. So we know this is a problem already. We know that there's a certain amount of risk if you're using these services. So the issue is, obviously, there is a big controversy, but this is ongoing probably over the last 5 years since there were Google Street View cars coming all over the world through our towns and cities. You know, do we want this stuff on the internet? You know, should Google be allowed to have this sort of power? But I feel it's part of an ongoing discourse, you know, and, you know, perhaps this story highlights more to people, you know, this is really what's happening. Whatever you're sending to your partner, to your friends, Google is seeing this. So do you really want to be using the service? But then again, you could easily live under a tin hat and not use anything.
Marianne, do you think that this will send criminals who are engaged in this kind of activity to other services? Or do you think that really doesn't matter whether it's Gmail or Yahoo Mail or anything else, the same type of activity is happening behind the scenes?
I would certainly hope that this would dissuade some people, you know, the way that maybe shows like CSI dissuade people from committing crimes, you know, for example. But if you really wanted to do something bad, you could find a way. You could use Tor, the anonymizing network, even though they're saying now that that has been, you know, hacked into as well. There's different things you can do. If you want to find a way to do something, as we say in England, dodgy on the internet, you can find a way. You know, you just need to know the right sort of people. But your everyday sort of person, if you have an everyday kind of sex offender, hopefully they wouldn't have knowledge of that technology. So maybe this will put them off.
Well, my own personal view is that it's very likely that not only is Google not breaking the law here, they probably would be breaking the law if they didn't report it. I mean, clearly, they've got the identification of pornographic images. They are scanning Gmail for everything for purposes of spam control and also for to serve up advertising. And so they have in their possession the smoking gun of matching these images. And if they were to fail to report people when they found matches of these images, that would probably be literally against the law. So unless we have any other information, I'm going to suggest that this is probably, we give Google the benefit of the doubt here, that they're simply obeying the law and they're not just being the volunteer sheriff here. They're doing what is required of them by law.
That's true. I mean, they say the same thing about Facebook. A lot of people who are Facebook volunteers, there's been blogs written whereby they're saying, please don't send in ridiculous reporting something that you don't like that's not important, because we're doing really important work here where we're finding children who are contacting us reporting images saying that they're being abused and we want to help them. So, you know, please take it seriously that what you're doing on Facebook, there's a lot of other stuff going on in the background.
Absolutely. Well, Marianne yep. Russin is at ibtimes.co.uk, and you can follow her on Twitter at Concertina226. Thank you so much for joining us all the way from London, Marianne Russin.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, just a sec. We're going to talk about a new business that Square wants to get into. But first, I want to tell you about ZipRecruiter. If you're a manager that hires people or if you own a small business, the most important decision you will ever make is who you hire. If you hire the wrong people, your business could fail. And if you hire the right people, your business could succeed wildly. And that's why you want to make that decision very, very carefully. But the problem is the best candidates are spread all over the internet on dozens of job boards, all the social networks. And so what are you going to do to go find all those people? ZipRecruiter is the solution. ZipRecruiter not only lets you post to over 50 job boards with one click, but they maintain a well-stocked resume database. So they've already got many of the people that you're looking for. You can search over 4 million resumes with thousands of new ones added every single day. ZipRecruiter can even send you resume alerts when new candidates match your search, so you can jump on them quick and hire them before your competition does. You can find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. Now, once you have your potential candidates, ZipRecruiter solves the problem of candidate overload because they'll sort through those and offer up only the most qualified candidates, so you don't have to sort through the thousands and thousands of candidates you might get, just the ones that are genuinely qualified for the job, and then you can hire that person fast. Now, find out why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 200,000 businesses. Right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for a free 4-day trial. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. And we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of Tech News Today. Well, Lindsay, it looks like Square wants to make house calls.
That's right. Payment service Square is attempting to diversify by acquiring a food delivery service called Caviar. The service, which is one of many in this competitive landscape of urban food delivery, specializes in delivering food from restaurants that don't typically deliver food. Jason Del Rey, who's a senior editor for Recode, is here to talk about it with us. And Jason, what's new with this story? Has anything happened this morning?
So within the last 15 minutes, Square published a blog post announcing that this deal is now official. They have acquired Caviar and plan to get into food delivery in sort of a big way.
That's amazing that they would get into this business because, of course, delivery business, I mean, it's one thing to be a payments company where they really have this great thing going and they're sort of building up their sort of point of sale thing. Now they've got one of those kinds of businesses where they have to slog through city by city and do physical delivery and meet space. It's kind of a risky thing, don't you think, for this company? It doesn't scale very well, for example.
Yeah, I mean, I think all of their moves outside of their core payment processing foundation could be looked at as risky moves. They've rolled out several over the last 6 months. Square Capital, which is a lending program for small businesses. Square Feedback, which is sort of a customer survey product. And then all the stuff they're doing on the consumer side. Square Wallet was their big bet for many years, which failed. Now they've rolled out Square Order, a pickup app. So they're determined to diversify and not depend solely on payment processing and the margins associated with that. So this is another risk, I would say.
What are the terms of this deal, and how could that payment service and a delivery service tie together to make something a little bit more for Square if it works
out?
So,
terms of the deal, they're not disclosing. The Times reported this is $90 million all stock. I've been able to confirm the all stock part. I haven't independently confirmed the price, but it's interesting to note, back in December, Jack Dorsey told his staff that he was returning 10% of his shares to the company to possibly be used in future acquisitions. So it looks like that gift back to the company is what perhaps enabled them to make an acquisition like this. As for integrations, you could see Caviar delivery ordering being integrated into the Square pickup app sometime in the future. So you have one app to browse through pickup and delivery options. And Caviar's model is interesting. They're not taking a payment processing cut. They're taking anywhere from 10% to 25% fee of the total bill from the restaurant. And then the delivery fee that customers have to pay goes straight to the delivery person. So this is a different model than Square's. Whether they keep it the same or package it together with Square's other products remains to be seen.
Now, Caviar currently operates in 10 cities. They charge $9.99 per delivery, although they told you, I believe, that they would soon be dropping the fee to $4.99. Is that correct?
Yeah, they. You know, one of my colleagues has been working on a related story and has been talking with them pretty frequently. And so I think they actually sent out a note to some customers this morning announcing the $4.99 fee. Whether that's a move to try to get some, you know, added traction and publicity at the same time of the acquisition, who knows? But that would be smart.
And, of course, the CEO is Twitter co-creator and co-founder Jack Dorsey. And you wrote that this was an attempt to help Square justify its $5 billion valuation. If they're valued at $5 billion, do they really need to justify it with acquisitions?
If they want an exit, it wasn't the acquisition itself, but it's the matter of they're trying to break into different categories that will allow their margin profile to look differently than it currently does. And a different margin profile could help them, if you're talking about an IPO, get a multiple valuation as a public company that they couldn't get now, sort of just working within the payments business that they're in.
So today, Recode published a great story. I think it was Liz Gans about the instant gratification economy.
And yep, Liz Gans.
How we all expect Liz Gans. Sorry about that. Do you think that economy is real and here to stay? Is that, you know, we have grown to expect everything delivered so quickly, but we've seen these little, you know, bubbly effects before where there are many competitors for a single type of service and they don't all last. What do you think?
I think it has a much better chance to stick around this time than it did, you know, before sort of the mobile revolution and what we saw back in the first dot-com bubble and bust. I think there'll be a huge shaking out over maybe the next year, 18 months, with plenty of companies going away. But I think a lot of these services are real, and I think they belong, probably make better sense business model wise as part of larger organizations. But I think they have a better chance of sticking around. Is there a bubble? Are there too many? Sure. I think that's probably a pretty safe bet, but I think we'll see a lot of these services remain.
Jason Del Rey writes at Recode.net, and you can follow him on Twitter at Del Rey. Thank you so much for joining us, Jason.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, Symantec and Kaspersky Lab have been banned from the list of brands that can be purchased by the Chinese government. The state-owned People's Daily newspaper reported that the government has approved five anti-malware companies, all of them Chinese-owned. Here we go, Lindsay Turrentine. The sort of steamrolling of foreign companies, foreign tech companies within China continues. The government's procurement agency has excluded Symantec and Kaspersky. Of course, in the past they've banned Windows 8 from being purchased by anyone in the government. And the reasons for that were totally bizarre. It's because Microsoft stopped support on Windows XP, and they're afraid that, I guess, in 15 years in the future, and they may stop supporting Windows 8, so that's banned. Where is this going to continue, Lindsay? Are they going to get to the point where only Chinese technology companies that are remotely related to communication, operating systems, or security are allowed to be purchased by the Chinese government?
Well, I mean, that's sort of what it seems like right now. We know that Google and Microsoft and Apple, all of them have been under intense amounts of pressure in China. But I think there's a lot of attention called to a series of events. There is a lot of international business happening with China. So I think it looks very bad right now. I suspect China is doing a lot of posturing and positioning its companies to start to grow so those Chinese security companies can get a little bit more exposure. I don't think that, for instance, Apple is going to get kicked out of China anytime soon. There's just too much business happening with that company.
Yeah, and at some point there could be a backlash by governments, a united front against this sort of, feels like protectionism. They have other reasons for it. But just for you Chinese technology buffs, the approved companies, of course, you've all heard of Symantec and Kaspersky, and Kaspersky Lab is the name of the company. But the approved companies are called Qihu 360 Technology, Venus Tech, CA Jinchen, Beijing Jiangmin, and Rising. But those are some household names right there. But again, this is for procurement by the government only. And this is the kind of thing that U.S. government does as well when they are concerned about Chinese hacking or whatever. They will ban, they have direct control over what the government itself buys. And so that's essentially what's happening. It's not clear how much of an impact this will have nationwide or for the business generally. Of course, Symantec has been scrambling to sort of protect their public image by saying, oh, we still do lots of business in China. China's a very important market, et cetera. And so, again, this is more a clue at the Chinese government's view of how they deal with these international situations like U.S. accusations of hacking by the Chinese military and also the NSA Snowden revelations, which, again, China has been very active in opposing in one way or another. Well, Lindsay, it looks like One Hotel may or may not be pretty inhospitable toward bad Yelp reviews.
So this is kind of an interesting story. One New York hotel, apparently, or some reported, had dreamed up a sort of a novel and nasty way to keep negative reviews off of Yelp. Page Six in New York reported that that this hotel called the Union Street Guest House in New York had posted a policy saying if anybody in your party, so if you have a wedding and you put a $500 policy deposit down for the wedding, if anybody in your party complains online on Yelp or any other service, we keep the deposit and you lose your $500. Now the hotel is saying that that was a joke. It said via Twitter that the policy regarding wedding fines was put on our site as a tongue-in-cheek response to a wedding many years ago and was meant to be taken down long ago and was certainly never enforced. But people on Yelp say otherwise, and there are a lot of one-star reviews, so it seems to be backfiring, even if it was a joke.
It is backfiring horribly. The Yelp reviews are loaded with one-star comments slamming the hotel, not only for this policy, but also complaining that the hotel is a lousy hotel and that sort of thing. And, who knows whether people actually stayed in the hotel. They want to, they read about this and they want to go hammer away at the hotel. But this, whether they are being honest or not, demonstrates the incredible power of online reviews and crowdsourced recommendations online. It's a nasty business. They companies hire people to go and do fake reviews. I personally have been hit pretty hard by Airbnb My wife and I stayed in a Airbnb apartment in Athens. They lied about almost every aspect of the place. And then so we wrote a negative review about it. And then they wrote a negative review about us, saying that we trashed the place and all this kind of stuff. So it's really the whole area of hospitality and online reviews is a very sensitive one, because if you get bad reviews, you're in trouble, because that's what people increasingly use to decide where they're going to spend their money. And so we'll see if this really was a joke. And if it wasn't, this could be the end of this hotel, because their reviews are looking pretty, pretty horrible.
Yeah. And even if it was a joke, I think at this point that it leaves a pretty bad taste in everyone's mouth. I mean, I know that small business owners get really frustrated because they feel like they don't have a lot of control over what happens out when somebody walks out the door, and one unreasonable customer can really ruin their business if they don't have a deep well of reviews on a service like Yelp. So I know I have a little sympathy for them, because I feel like they often end up in frustrating positions, but this is certainly not the way to deal with it.
You know, if they wanted to really get a good reputation, they could have done the opposite. If in fact this was a deliberate joke, they should have paid people for negative reviews and said, thank you, we appreciate your input, we're always trying to make our hotel better. They would have gotten a lot of coverage for that, and everybody would have said, wow, that is a fantastic hotel. But no, that's not what happened. No. It's the opposite of that. Well, in just a sec, we're going to find out about something that is being sold at auction on eBay. And you're not going to believe what it is. But first, I want to tell you about Squarespace, the best place in the world to build a website. I've been using it for many years. It's just a fantastic site. Squarespace has 25 beautiful templates for you to start with. So you pick a template. Every single one of these just fantastically well designed. And then you can go in there and customize it to your heart's content, add your own pages, change the typography, change whatever you like. Just don't veer too far away from the beautiful designs, because they have super, super great designers. You can if you want. And if you're a developer, of course, you can really get in there and customize. If you have a small business or for any reason you need a logo, Squarespace has a logo creator tool. You don't have to be a designer to use it. In fact, with zero design experience or knowledge or ability at all, you can build a really, really cool logo. And you can check out a video about that product at blog.squarespace.com. Totally unique. This is a really great feature. And Squarespace, in general, overall, is super easy to use. But if you ever need tech support, they have email and chat support 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now, one of the great things about Squarespace, and this is a relatively recent feature, is that they now have e-commerce on all subscription plan levels. You can sell things online. You can put up your own online store to sell whatever it is you're making or whatever it is you like to sell. You can raise money for your nonprofit, your school fund drive, wedding registry, you name it. If you need to raise money on the internet, they make it really easy. If you try to do this on your own, it's super difficult to do. And you really want to take advantage of Squarespace's online e-commerce features. You can create flexible coupons, for example, that apply to all orders. So orders that meet a certain minimum or for specific products can be applicable for the coupon. And of course, they have unified inventory management, express checkout mode, data export, social integrations, order confirmation emails, and so much more. So it's not just, they don't just enable you to take credit cards. They give you the whole soup to nuts offering for doing real e-commerce online. It starts at just $8 a month, and that includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. And of course, Squarespace takes care of all the hosting, so you don't have to. So don't wait. Start your free 2-week trial now with no credit card required, and start building your website today. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code TNT. That'll get you 10% off, and we thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Well, a screenshot of a 4chan post that was sold on eBay for $90,900. $90,900. That's for a screenshot. The screenshot was entitled Artwork by Anonymous, and it shows a bad picture of the following comment, and I quote, "Art used to be something to cherish. Now literally anything could be art. This post is art." The highest bidder will be sent a framed printout of the screenshot. Wow.
This is great. I went onto the eBay site. I was kind of poking around. This is, the seller is in Brooklyn. That does not surprise me.
They also have a bridge they'd like to sell you.
And plenty of hipsters. to sell you 4chan screenshot art. But what's interesting about this to me is that there are, it's not just, it doesn't seem like a stunt. There are a lot of bids here, like 40.
Yeah.
Maybe. I'm just eyeballing it. It's
yeah,
just inching their way up. But some of them are kind of random amounts. Like there was one bid for $42,042. So that's, there's a little humor in there, I think.
With 4chan involved, inevitably, this is very stuntish. However, the seller actually requires that, you know, there are no refunds and so on. So we'll see if actual money has changed hands here. I kind of have doubts, but we'll see how this goes. And who knows, you know, if it works out for them, maybe they could just print another copy and sell another one.
Maybe. I want it to be real.
Yeah.
I do.
I'd like to buy it and hang it in my living room for all to see.
This is sort of along the lines of the mac and cheese.
Yeah. Yeah. Or the Kanye West. Somebody on Etsy sells Kanye West tweets that have been embroidered and framed.
That takes real work.
Yeah, real work, real physical goods, probably significantly more value than this because it involves actual yarn. So we'll see how that goes. Well, that is more or less the tech news today. Lindsay Turrentine, what have you been working on these days besides grappling with John C. Dvorak on Twit?
CNET has just rolled out its updated iOS app, and it's a really great update. So we're happy about that. Go download it.
All right. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next Monday.
All right. Have a good week.
All right. You too. Well, subscribe to Tech News Today, and we want you to subscribe, and you want to subscribe too because it's awesome. It comes right to you on Stitcher, iTunes, YouTube, Feedly, Yahoo, RSS, so many options, and you can choose your favorite way to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. Please follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter name is Tech News Today TV. And you can join our Google Plus community and also circle our page. Just search Google Plus for Tech News Today, and please send us your thoughts and opinions. Send email to tnt@twit.tv or leave voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. And don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every weeknight right here on the Twit Network. My name's Mike Elgin. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.